We all know your time is valuable. Whether you're hyper-focused on admin tasks like notes and billing, or simply trying to make a cup of coffee, or even run to the bathroom in between appointments, constant interruptions can derail your day. This podcast is sponsored by The Receptionist for iPad, a digital check-in system that eliminates the need to walk back and forth from your office to the waiting room to see if your next appointment has arrived. Clients can securely check in for their appointments, and you'll be immediately notified by text, email, or your preferred channel. Break free from interruptions and make the most of your time. I've been using them for almost 3 years now, and it saves me hours in my week. Start a 14-day free trial of The Receptionist for iPad by going to thereceptionist.com/private practice. Make sure to start your trial with that link, and you'll also get your first month free if you decide to sign up. Hey everyone, welcome back to the All Things Private Practice Podcast. I'm joined today by Dr. Cade Sharp. He is an autistic, queer, trans, licensed, independent, clinical, social worker. I always get all these acronyms wrong for license types. Registered play therapist, supervisor, certified sex therapist, and child mental health specialist practicing in Washington State. He specializes in supporting disabled, queer, non-cis, autistic, and ADHD clients of all ages, as well as neurodivergent supervisees. He has his PhD in clinical sexology through the Modern Sex Therapy Institutes. Cade loves helping people figure out that they're autistic, playing board and card games, role-playing, reality TV, true crime, and his two adopted senior cats. The Autistic Clinical Insight Symposium is coming up, and he is on the leadership team and would love to also talk about that. So we're going to touch on that at the end of the podcast as well. Welcome to the show. My brain is going very slowly as I butcher some of that bio, so I apologize. Did I miss anything?
No, you got it all. That's me in a nutshell.
I hate hearing bios being read about me, so I don't know how you feel about your own, but I would get used to it because I'm seeing you put yourself into more and more spaces for that to happen.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to be an autistic trans person who doesn't like to be perceived, but really wants to get certain information out there and normalize things for folks and validate folks. Mm-hmm. I'm with you on the awkwardness of the bio. Yeah.
So I was just telling Cade off air that I've done a podcast batching marathon, and you are recording 17 of the week. So I'm going to do my best to drive this and have this conversation. And you have a lot of topics of interest to me. So I'm trying to think of how do we fit this all into 30 minutes? One thing you said before we started recording was the combination of how do we balance it all out as you are going through your PhD program as an autistic human being, managing that energy, managing the burnout, managing just the capacity piece, I think is huge. But there's also a part of me that's we could talk about the kink piece. We could talk about the sex piece. We could talk about the play therapy piece. So you steer the ship. Where do you want to start?
Well, what I love is that it all kind of ties in to each other. You know, what is kink but play, you know?
Yeah.
And how do we take care of ourselves? Some of that involves play. I think if we want to start with the PhD piece, we could start there. Maybe some of your listeners would find some value in that. Maybe they're considering going and pursuing a different degree type or certification.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's do it. So how recently did you get your PhD?
I think it officially conferred in January of 2024. So I had it a little over a year.
And huge. When you were embarking upon that, were you thinking this sounds fucking awesome. I'm really excited to take on the dissertation piece and everything that comes with it.
Well, truly what led me to it was figuring out I was autistic and realizing what a gap there is in diagnosis here in Washington State where I practice.
Yeah.
And I looked at the codes, you know, the RCWs and the WACs that say, here is specifically who can diagnose this. And it was a little vague at the time. And it spoke about PhD level, doctorate level folks. And I thought, well, if I'm going to go back to school so that I can help the community more, what would be interesting?
Sure. Yeah. So that's a great pivot point for sure.
Yeah. Well, and looking at too, how much time will these take? Because
yes,
you know, can I go back to school for 8-ish years to get a psychiatry or psychology degree and do the clinical supervision piece to make sure that I can test and evaluate an XYZ?
Absolutely. That's a lot. to take on, because I think that we often feel like not responsible when we are parts of these communities, but we do feel this calling to ensure that there is more accessibility and more affirming care and more knowledge. So energy wise, how did you balance the PhD program as you're also navigating life? And were you also in private practice at the time?
I was about a year into private practice, and it's about the same time I figured out I was autistic.
Okay.
And so lots of pivotal,
lots of milestones, lots of transition points, and lots of things to unpack. And I think a lot of people who maybe haven't had that discovery in life don't understand the amount of energy and capacity that it takes in order to deconstruct the entire life that you've existed in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so much looking back on things going, oh, it makes sense. But also sometimes the grief or the feelings of, why did nobody notice, you know?
Yes, yes. The grief relief process that I talk about so often is so freaking real. And it's like, I struggled so much of that of myself back in 2021 when I first was diagnosed. And there was a lot of deconstruction and honestly a lot of unlearning and a lot of learning. And fast forward 4 years, and I would say there's still a lot of that going on. And if we're saying that for ourselves, then what does it mean for providers who don't really get it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that was a big place where I gathered a lot of momentum and energy, was that the feelings that were coming up inside for me, I was like, I don't want other people to have to experience this alone or with the providers that were offering those types of services in our kind of local area.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So you saw that need and wanted to fill that gap a bit. You go back to this PhD program. Now, let me ask, are you ADHD or autistic?
I'm autistic with a Vyvanse prescription, so.
Okay.
You know, I have not been officially diagnosed as an ADHDer by a psychiatrist or psychologist or someone in the mental health field, but my doctor's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. And so it resonates with me. And, you know, someone who had been told like, wow, you've just got treatment-resistant depression and anxiety.
Yep.
The ADHD meds really make a difference.
That's pretty telling. And if we're going with the research of 50 to 70% of autism or ADHD, let's just say, even if you're autism ADHD traits, if you're in this PhD program, I have enough time, like hard enough time balancing my energy, working from home, running businesses, but I cannot imagine adding like an intense doctorate into the mix. How the hell did you balance that?
I upfront did a lot of research. So if anyone's considering going into a program, research the heck out of it. Figure out how much time is it going to take you? What are deadlines on things? What's the quarter or semester schedule like?
Yeah.
When are most people graduating? Because they might tell you, you can do this in 2 years, 4 years, 6 years. But if everybody else is graduating an additional 2 years later, you want to know that. So I did a lot of research.
So that autistic part that you didn't really know much about was really helping to accommodate some of this.
Oh, like, yeah.
A lot of it. Yeah. I like
love a good spreadsheet, love some good research. So upfront, you know, comparing and contrasting and also the cost, you know, if I have to decrease my caseload a little financially, what will that look like to afford the program?
Sure.
And does the content align with my interests? So
huge.
Looking at all the potential doctorates, clinical sexology was the one that called out to me the most, because ever since I was young, I've been so interested in humans, why they do what they do, especially people that are kind of on the fringe of society or in counterculture spaces.
Right.
So I thought, let's do that. Most of my clients at the time who were, heck, even some of my teens and adults, like they were interested in kink, they're trans, they're queer, they need better sex education, they want support, they want someone who gets it, who brings ideas to the table. And I thought, well, let's go there, let's go check this out. And I think that was a big motivating factor too. I'm sure you've probably talked about it before on this podcast, but for autistic folks, that like meditative flow state we get into when it's a special interest.
Mm-hmm. Monotropic focus is one of my favorite places to be. Because I think that's when I feel the most, maybe alive. Yeah, alive. I think that's when I feel the most alive. And everything else, all the outside noise, right? The sensory overwhelm, everything else kind of dissipates and like falls to the surface. And for me, it's just a wonderfully peaceful, enjoyable place to be that I try to find so often in life and have such a hard time accessing.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel you there. Another benefit to this program was that it was primarily on the weekends, so I could kind of turn off like client-facing brain and really dive in.
That's great. So that feels like it makes it a bit more accessible as well. And then how long does it take you to finish this out?
They said 2 years. It took me 2.5 about, and a little longer for the degree to actually confer because of all the processes on their side, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge. I mean, it's a huge accomplishment.
Thanks. Yeah.
And it sounds like it's really informed a lot of practice going forward and really helped you anchor into the things that you feel truly passionate about.
Yeah. Yeah. It has been very transformative to some of the work that I do. A big piece that kept me going too was picking a dissertation topic that actually was very interesting and very close to home, really aligned with my values.
Right. What was your dissertation topic, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, it was called Kink on the Spectrum. And okay. So I looked at autistic folks and their experiences of empowerment with kink, because there is so much out there that is very disheartening to read about what people think about autistic people and intimacy, sex, kink, all of it.
Sure. That sounds so... You were able to find a dissertation topic that sounds kind of special interest related.
Yeah.
And I imagine that really helped get through the ups and downs and the energy wavering back and forth as you go through this program, as you maintain a caseload, as you are a transhuman in the United States of America, navigating all the fucking chaos that exists in this world with that. So there was a lot of energy expenditure, I have to imagine. How did you support yourself? How did you protect your energy? How did you take care of yourself during that time?
Yeah, that was definitely a struggle, you know, figuring out what's the balance, you know, where are the spaces you can kind of walk away from, especially in that second year where the dissertation was the huge focus. Like,
Right. How
do you step away from the research, the interviews, figuring out the themes? And I think it was a kind of a balancing act that was ever evolving, which the autistic pieces of my brain were like, can we just get a schedule? Can we just, can we do the same thing over and over and somehow have that work? And it didn't, you know, but I think making sure to carve out space where that wasn't the primary topic of conversation, or that my brain wasn't primarily there, space away from clients too, because like I said, so much of what they were discussing overlapped as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, needing that reprieve, right? Just to have space for yourself to decompress and sensory soothe. And I would imagine, and you know, I could be wrong, that all of that could also be a fast track to autistic burnout.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think really pacing myself was important. And, you know, that's not to say that sometimes I wasn't in burnout. There's definitely, you know, some health challenges that arose during that time that still are not fully resolved or mitigated, but making sure that I was aware of like, oh, I'm noticing some stuff. And if I couldn't notice it, giving permission to my friends and family, like point it out if you see me getting like irritable out of nowhere or acting out of character.
Sure. Yeah, that's huge to notice those warning signs that we're kind of approaching the place of no return, which is kind of where I find myself most days these days.
Yeah, especially when you're juggling so many projects. You know, I know you've got the podcast, you've got retreats, you've got the group practice, like all those things. And I'm in a similar space of trying to figure out now that I've got my PhD, it opens up new opportunities and new ways to focus in on the great info I learned through that.
Yeah.
But how do you balance it all? It's tough.
That's the $1 million question, Cade. If I figure that out, I'll certainly share it with everybody. But with that, you know, it sounds like when I read your bio, you have so many interests. So where are you putting most of your energy and your focus and your time now that you are like, okay, I have this training. I like doing speaking. I like doing consultation. I do therapy. I do group work. Like there's a lot that you're offering.
Yeah. I kind of follow where the energy is. You know, like I do a little pre-planning of my year's schedule with some speaking engagements. So I know like in September, I'm doing two different play therapy related trainings. And then I'm also in October doing a kink-related one. And then November, I've got some kink and some other stuff through the Autistic Clinical Insights Symposium. So I think it's also balancing it. I think if I did only play therapy all year, I would be kind of crispy about that topic.
Yeah, for sure. I like that. There's a diversification of just interests as well, and just kind of watering each plant, so to speak, because I think that for me, if my brain hyper focuses on like, I can only do this one thing for the rest of the year, I think that would be hellacious. And I would really buck up against that. And I would really struggle with like feeling like the walls are closing in a little bit.
Absolutely.
And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Alma. When I first decided to go in network with insurance, I found the whole process overwhelming. I can actually remember a couple of days that made me want to cry, where I spent hours on the phone being transferred or hung up on or not given clear answers or instructions. I knew I needed to get paid, and I also knew that I didn't know if I could do this by myself. If you're running into those same challenges, Alma can help. They made it easy to get credentialed a lot faster, handled all of the paperwork, and offered way better rates than I could have gotten on my own. They also make sure I get reimbursed within 2 weeks of every session so that I know when I'm getting paid. Visit helloalma.com/ATPP to learn more. That's helloalma.com/ATPP. Hey everyone, it's Patrick with All Things Private Practice, and I just want to invite you to join us in Scotland for our second Doubt Yourself, Do It Anyway Summit. That's happening July 14th to the 17th of 2025. We have 12 amazing speakers, 12 MBC CEs available in Edinburgh, Scotland, which is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life. The link is in my show notes and on my website at allthingspractice.com. You can also join us in Greece in September if you're a leader or wanting to start a group practice. We have a leadership retreat happening on the island of Crete from September 6th to the 11th. Honestly, one of the most beautiful villages I've ever been to in Hania. And then in 2026, we have limited spots available in two different New Zealand retreats. One is for neurodivergent entrepreneurs, March 1st to the 8th of 2026. And then beyond private practice, moving beyond one-on-one therapy, creating alternative streams of income. That's March 15th to the 22nd, 2026 in Queenstown, New Zealand. Check the links. Doubt yourself. Do it anyway.
And, you know, something we haven't talked about that I definitely parasocially see you do too is surrounding yourself with people that are excited about the things you're doing. So
sure.
Sometimes that motivation can carry me when I don't have the internal get up and go, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it can be kind of contagious in a way where it's like, okay, other people around are really excited for you. They're helping build you up within the context of your creative process. And for me, that has been unbelievably vital just to have that circle of support. And even people you can bounce ideas off of who might say like, yay or nay, or like, yeah that sounds good, but maybe you could tweak it this way. And maybe you could look at it from this perspective, really helps me kind of not feel so siloed and alone in it, because I do work from home. If I'm not traveling for retreats, I'm like, I'm in my house all the time, not often leaving it. So I think that's what a lot of people don't see on the outside too, is for those of us who have more sensitive systems, who are more impacted energetically, we're going to need a lot of buffer time and downtime to just take care of our own neurology and our own needs.
Absolutely. You know, in regards to how I'm balancing things, my social life definitely took a bit of a dip during that process. And like, it's slowly starting to recover now, but I spent a lot of time at home doing telehealth for clients because that environment I could control.
Right.
So can't control the deadlines, can't control how the staff there or the professors are doing things, but I could control my environment and a little bit of my schedule and how I wanted to attack the dissertation process.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And just, you know, I think that allows your brain and your nervous system to regulate a little bit, to say like, I can control these things. And that gives me a little bit more to anchor into, so I don't feel so untethered all the time and dysregulated.
Absolutely. And I think moving into how do I use it in my practice, and what keeps my motivation going there to help balance things, I also find getting people interested in your interests can be very motivating. So I know you've had Sabrina Longley on the podcast before. She and I are kind of, we're knocking around some training ideas, and we're hoping to do a podcast that centers on more of the like kink relationships side of things for autistic folks.
Yeah.
And
that
I think
sounds
that's
amazing.
Yeah, it's like branching out a little bit for both of us, and really no pressure. You know, we're not going into it thinking we got to build this like huge money-making podcast. It's more like, how can we help people? How can we get this info out there? What is most palatable to an audience? How would they like to receive it?
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like Sabrina would take the role of the extrovert in the dynamic and relationship.
Yes. Yeah, I love the energy that she brings, and how it refuels her to be so social, because that has generally not been me.
Yeah, I can relate wholeheartedly. So we do need like different types of energy in our lives to help build us up and support us and surround us with. So I'm hearing you attended a alternative income stream webinar that I did the other day in training.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing that you have a lot of different interests. You want to pursue a lot of these different ideas. How for you has it worked in terms of like, how do I not spread myself thin between all of the things that I want to do? If it
usually, yeah, good question. I usually go the route of like spreading myself too thin and then being like, okay, as soon as these commitments are over, I'm going to have to scale it back.
Yeah. That's kind of my MO as well. While I'm in it, I'm always like, okay, next year or next time, I won't do this to myself. And yeah, I find myself having to do a lot of accountability, like checks and balances, and often not paying attention to them or blowing right past them.
Yeah. And I liked attending your webinar, because that is one place that I've struggled. Is I've got all these interests, I've got all this knowledge, I want to share it, and I always forget about the money piece, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not to say that like, because I live so comfortably, I can disregard money, but it's to say that that is kind of my last priority.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which so it should be higher, you know?
It depends, right? It's all dependent on situation and values and priorities, but I think there is a way to balance the both ands of like, we can do a lot of good and we can put a lot of creation into the world and we can get paid to do it. Like, I'm getting paid to talk to you right now. I have sponsors in place for this podcast, which still feels surreal to me that people are paying me to sit in my office of my home and talk to people. But I think there are ways to have a impact and a ripple effect, not only just locally, but on a global level, and not completely destroy yourself in the process, which is something that has really taken me a long time to figure out. And I feel hypocritical because I'm in massive burnout right now, but like, I know 2026 will be different. At least I'm saying that right now. I don't know if I actually believe that, but.
Well, I think so many of us go through it, you know, figuring out how do you balance the things that bring you joy, the stuff that goes along with it. How do you outsource and delegate things where you can? How do you afford to do that?
Yeah.
I mean, our current society doesn't make it easy to do things that bring you joy and sustain yourself.
No, it does not. And that's why I think like anchoring in and finding the people, like you mentioned, the community is huge. Putting your interests and your passions into what's lighting you up right now. Like, what do I feel really energized by? What do I feel really excited about? If I can move in those directions and that becomes my job, then if I can marry that and get more into that monotropic focus space where I'm like, ooh, I'm really like, the ideas are just flowing. I'm writing, I'm creating right now. I feel really good. Then it feels like a victory for me. And it's hard. It's not always easy to access, but those are the ways that I've been trying to like look at it more and more throughout the stages of my career.
Yeah. I love that. And I think those are a lot of the things I keep in mind too. Yeah. And I'm excited, by the way, to see that you're working on a book. I hope that's not a secret at this point.
It is not a secret, okay. But it is horrifying nonetheless. Yeah. I think every step of the way makes it more real, and like, signing the contract with the publisher was like, okay, this is real. But then when it comes out into like media and publication, this becomes more real. It's a bit horrifying if I'm being honest, but you know, that's kind of been my entire existence of like, think that everything is going to be horrible and horrifically criticized and not valuable and experience that the entire time and then put it out into the world. So I'm just going to follow the same track, I think.
I love it. Yeah, it's a very similar process for myself, you know? Mm-hmm. I worry about how it'll be received, worry why am I the one that people should trust with this information. I don't think I wrote anywhere when I reached out to participate on the podcast, but I just authored two chapters on play therapy for trans kids and trans clients. I'm working on one for autistic sexuality and exploring that in therapy. I'm co-authoring that. So I know that fear of like being published and like, what will that mean? And you know, how will people receive it? Cause every person is so different in what they need support around.
That's true. That's true. I wholeheartedly agree. I think Sabrina has helped me with some of that because she's like, you can't say the right thing for everybody. You're just not going to encapsulate everybody's autistic experience in your book. That's not a reality. And I'm like, but I want it to be.
I know. Want to support everyone, but it's so hard.
It is. Would you say, and you know, how vulnerable was the process of just publishing those chapters? Like, I have found that writing this book and working on publishing it feels like the most soul-exposing experience of my entire life, and it's fucking overwhelming.
Yeah. Well, especially with yours, where I assume you're going to give quite a bit of like biographical stuff. I didn't give much of that because they're textbook chapters, which felt safer for me to start with, like, let's just see how this feels.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. This is going to be like memoir plus like tangible strategy. So it feels daunting, but you know, I think that's a part of this journey is like you were mentioning before, you saw this need and this gap in Washington and you were like, I want to fill it. And I think the more voices that are out there that are affirming of experiences that people feel so fucking isolated and alone with, because when we move more into like advocacy spaces and marginalized groups, we tend to surround ourselves with a lot of the same types of thoughts and opinions. It's really easy for me to forget that a lot of people don't talk about autism all day, every day.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are going to read something and be like, this is the first time I've ever felt understood in my entire life. And that's kind of what I'm trying to anchor into.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, when I give trainings and other trans and non-binary folks are there, I always worry, like, am I doing them justice? Like, are they going to walk away being like, wow, this guy did not represent me or my experience at all, didn't even mention it. Usually after those trainings in the evals, I get the feedback that they felt seen, that they felt like their clients were seen, and that they appreciated being in community.
I love that. I think that's huge. And that's like, that's just further reinforces that you are doing the work and like you're an asset to the community. So really want to congratulate you on everything you're doing right now and really, really cool to connect this way. Anything else that you want to add into this conversation while we're here?
I mean, just as a side note, you know, I started my practice, officially saw the first client in September of 2020. And so August, I was listening and consuming like any and every bit of advice on opening a private practice and how to run one. And if I'm remembering right, I think your podcast started right around then, because I recall for many months listening to what you were putting out and really appreciating it. It was you and like two or three other podcasts really helped me feel comfortable and confident in charging private pay rates and really niching down and working with very specific types of clients and feeling confident opening my doors. So it was awesome. You know, I listened to you for probably 6 months, pretty darn consistently.
Wow.
Didn't see you for a while, you know, kind of lost track of podcasts because I was working and building things and then eventually the PhD. And then one day I saw you post in one of the mutual Facebook groups we're in about how you were autistic. And I just thought, no wonder his content resonated with me so much, because you and I have such different stories, you know, and I thought, I don't know why I'm so drawn to him, but this is great. And yeah, it's very cool that you're so open about that, because I think a lot of us feel represented and seen in that way.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. That means a lot to me. When I started this podcast, I did not know that I was autistic. It took about a year after that. I was just in creation mode. And like, I was always wondering why people were so drawn to what I had to say or what I have to type. And I think now thinking back, it's like, okay, maybe autistic me is just showing up as authentically as possible because it doesn't know how to do things any differently. And it's been quite the journey. So thank you for saying that. And I really do appreciate that quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that when we're putting ourselves out there authentically, when we're in charge of our own marketing and our own taglines and our own whatever, like that is, we're drawn to each other. I mean, there's research that shows that we are drawn to each other. So it's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Thank you, Cade. Well, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your story and your journey to get here. I'm unbelievably proud of you, of everything that you're doing. I see your name keep popping up. So just balance your energy as much as you can. I know how hard that is. But I know you have some stuff you want to share about stuff that's coming up. So take it away.
Yeah. If folks are looking for autistic and neurodivergent community, I would encourage them to check out the Autistic Clinical Insights Symposium. It'll be November 14th through 16th of 2025. I think from 10 a.m. Eastern till 6 or so, depends on the day that weekend. And it's virtual, so you can attend from the comfort of your own environment. I think there's like over 40 presenters, and you can earn up to 13 NBCC CEs. So yeah, that should be a lot of fun. I'm on a couple panels and I'm on the leadership team, so I'll definitely be there. And then if folks want to find me individually, my practice, which includes like peer consultation, therapy, all that, the trainings, it's www.cadesharp.com or on Facebook. It's facebook.com/spectrumcouncil. You can find me and later Sabrina with our podcast at neurokink.org. And I think that's it. Yeah. Thank you for your time today, Patrick.
You are so welcome. And everything that Cade just listed will be in the show notes so that everyone has access to those links and that information. Thank you so much for coming on and spending your Friday afternoon with me. Well, I guess it's your Friday early afternoon with me.
Thank you.
And to everyone listening to the All Things Private Practice podcast, new episodes are out on Saturdays on all major platforms and YouTube. You can like, download, subscribe, and share. Doubt yourself. Do it anyway. We'll see you next week. And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors. Hey, everyone. It's Patrick from All Things Private Practice. I know a lot of you are feeling uncertain right now about your caseloads, the economy, or what the next year is going to look like for your practice. I really get it. Things are fucking weird out there right now. That is exactly why I'm creating the Beyond Private Practice Recession Proofing Intensive, a 5-hour live neurodivergent affirming online event happening on Friday, December 12th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are going to talk about real, tangible ways to diversify your income through podcasting, retreats, writing that book of yours, and speaking engagements. They're all symbiotic and feed into each other. One leads to the other, and I'm going to show you exactly how to leverage and maximize so you can build stability and freedom no matter what's happening around you. The cost for the intensive is only $299, valued at over $2,500. Because I want this to be accessible. Just to let you in on some behind the scenes, my wife works for the federal government and she hasn't been paid for weeks due to the shutdown. So yeah, things are tight, but I also know how powerful this work is. And I want to make sure to give back to the therapist community that has supported me through everything I've created the last 4 years. Not only will you walk away with strategies, templates, confidence, and clarity, you'll walk away with 4 MBC CEs. Practical strategies, and a sense of hope that you can actually build something sustainable. Join me Friday, December 12th. Go to allthingspractice.com/beyond-recession-intensive to grab your spot. You can also find it on my website, on my homepage, and under my pop-ups and all of my tabs. I'm looking forward to spending that day with you to get that clarity and confidence that you need so that you can doubt yourself and do it anyway. Hey everyone, it's Patrick. Some of you may know that I own a group therapy practice in North Carolina, Resilient Mind Counseling. We specialize in supporting the neurodivergent LGBTQIA+, and Black, Brown, and Asian communities online and across North Carolina. We also have limited in-person openings at our offices in Asheville and Cary. We really love working with clients who are coming to terms with both autism and ADHD discoveries later in life or questioning, as well as the intersections of race, gender, identity, and orientation. All of our therapists have lived experience and identify as ADHD, autistic, or ADHD. Our team of affirming therapists offers a safe, anti-racist, anti-oppressive, inclusive, and accessible space where you can show up exactly as you are. No masking, no judgment, and no need to make eye contact, just real connection and healing. We accept most commercial insurances like Blue Cross Blue Shield, United, Aetna, and MedCost, as well as self-pay options. We currently have openings for new clients, and you can visit our website at resilientmindcounseling.com. And if you would prefer, you can either text or call to get started to our HIPAA-compliant phone line at 828-515-1246. You can also email us at scheduling@resilientmindcounseling.com.